You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, today is Veterans Day, when we honor those men and women who have fought for our country. Some have been injured and some were killed in action, and yet others came home to their families. Today on The Exchange, we will hear from some veterans who served in America's conflicts abroad and from those who reach out to lend a hand to vets when they return. The Veterans Centers in the United States provide a wide range of referrals for support services. The Sioux City Vets Center is no exception. Center Director Mary Jordan says the centers were created many years ago to help Vietnam vets deal with trauma they experienced in the line of duty.
And we started as a peer support program to help those that were suffering with traumas of war, but also needed help with things like readjustment, reintegration to families, getting jobs, things of that nature. Over the course of the last 40-plus years, the eligibility for our services grew from Vietnam-only specific veterans to veterans of every combat theater of operations, and also veterans that have endured military sexual trauma. We specifically are a fee-free service, part of the Department of Veteran Affairs, for the purpose of eligibility of those combat theater veterans and sexual trauma exposed. So that is unique of our counterparts at the medical center, where there is eligibility and it functions like a standard doctor's office like it would for you or I, where eligibility is determined by service only, whereas we are a free service to people that they've earned by virtue of that combat experience.
You get to know them pretty well and you find out their needs.
What we've done is our program has morphed from a peer-only support basis in the 1979 on up. The Sioux City office opened in 1981 and was peer-based only. And we've moved into a professionalized counseling model. So we are staffed by 3 full-time clinical counselors, and we have a full-time outreach worker as well. So through the therapy process, we do an extensive mental health history that includes an extensive military history component that would be unique to any veteran that per se wanted to go in the community and secure counseling on their own. They wouldn't have the full breadth of their service time and any potential service-related trauma that was interwoven into their interventions and assessment process the way that we would here.
Is there any area where you've seen a growth, say, in any particular area when people come in that maybe has been more prevalent in the last few years, or is it kind of all across the board?
I would say it is across the board. The lion's share of our clientele has been the Vietnam and Vietnam-era groups. Largely because of our location in the nation, just Midwestern in general, that's where we are heavily, and we have no active duty bases in our proximity. However, one area of growth with us here in Sioux City has been with our reserve and guard units. Vet centers are able to serve currently serving men and women, whereas VA Medical Centers does require a separation entirely from the military service.
Is there ever a problem getting the word out about your services?
I think we're a well-kept secret. Our largest referral source are the veterans themselves. Those have had great experiences, and also our community partnerships is an integral part of what we do. That's why we have full-time outreach on staff that does everything from working events to handling general questions, because oftentimes you might understand that a veteran might more likely walk in the door to ask a fairly benign question about perhaps benefits or signing up for something like even educational benefits, and kind of wants to poke around a little bit to see what the counseling's about without necessarily getting too far into the weeds with it. So our outreach efforts are definitely a lower risk way of getting our veterans information they need without necessarily always embarking on a counseling experience with them. Oftentimes we find, by virtue of helping people with other needed resources, that they find that coming in for some counseling is beneficial to them. However, a lot of people don't know that we're here. A lot of folks also don't know that we are part of the Department of Veteran Affairs. And many people don't know that if they are eligible, that for the rest of their life, they're eligible for a fee-free service. But there is a lot of misinformation, as you might understand, about VA services. And also, it only takes one bad customer experience, obviously, to get that in the community. So if people are angry with the VA, oftentimes about their claim process, which we have nothing to do with, which is a completely different process entirely through the Veterans Benefits Administration, we help them navigate those resources and help understand the differences and the nuances as well as part of our outreach efforts. And also by virtue of securing an adequate counseling platform, sometimes they're getting the treatment necessary to provide the evidence that supports their claims as well. So we like to dovetail a bit and help with the multifacets that go in with it. So the greatest thing is that if there's ever a doubt if a veteran in this community or their family qualifies for anything with the VA or just has questions, the Vet Center is a great place to call with any general questions, to set up counseling, or even get help for someone that they know that's a veteran or they're related to.
That was Mary Jordan. She is the director of the Sioux City Vet Center, which helps veterans find help and services that can enrich their lives. You're listening to The Exchange, and today we're honoring veterans. It is Veterans Day. The Sioux City Vet Center, we just talked about, is one of many across the country, but Support Siouxland Soldiers is a local volunteer-run nonprofit organization. Support for Siouxland Soldiers, Sarah Peterson, says the volunteer group was founded in 2007.
There is a huge deployment of Army National Guard troops from the Siouxland area, and that's when it started. Military families came together not only to support their soldiers by sending care packages, but also support one another. And so it kind of exploded right out of the gate. So 14 years later, Support Siouxland Soldiers is still sending care packages, but also does support events for soldiers, military families, and veterans here on the home front as well. So one of the ways that they do that is through grocery distributions every month. Every month, Support Siouxland Soldiers distributes about 5,000 pounds of groceries. And we used to do that at an event where people could come inside, but with COVID, we switched gears, and now it's a grocery drive-through distribution. So it requires a lot of volunteers to put that together, but it's a great event, and we typically serve around 200 to 300 veterans and military family members at those events.
You also send out care packages, right?
Yes, we do send out care packages. I think we've sent over 6,000 care packages over the years. And, you know, we have a lot of deployed Siouxland troops right now. And so we are going to be hosting a care pack event for the families of any soldier that's deployed. And that's on November 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. It will be at the Army National Guard, and there will be information coming out on the Facebook page of Support Siouxland Soldiers and also on the website. It'll be a private event just for the family members, so that they can come. They can bring items with them if they want to include special notes or photos or letters of their family to share with their soldier. We're also taking donations of items to put in the care packages. Great things are like holiday decorations, cards, snacks, anything with protein, beef sticks, beef jerky, any like individual drink mix that they can put in a water bottle, or candy is always a popular item as well.
You also have things just for the families. You had this drive-in movie for families of deployed service people. You give out deployment dolls for kids.
So we're 100% volunteer-run organization, and most of our volunteers, you know, are military families or have a connection with the military. So we're very passionate about supporting our veterans and our military families. So yeah, we have some fun events and things that we are providing to the families. So we have over 300 deployed soldiers right now. And we thought a great thing that we could do while social distancing is make deployment dolls. And so each doll has a photo of their soldier on the doll. It's kind of like a pillow in the shape of a soldier. And so we have volunteers sewing those and imprinting the images on those. And then each military child gets their own doll that has their soldier on it. So that's probably one of my favorite projects that we've done. And so we've made over 200 deployment dolls so far, and we're still making them. And then we did a drive-in movie theater. We're just trying to be creative and think of ways that we can still support our veterans and military families without having to be in a space altogether. We used to do about 24 support events a year, and we were all indoors together. And so we're trying to figure out new ways of still providing that support but keeping everybody safe.
And your husband was deployed in Iraq at one time, right?
Yes. Yep. He served. He's getting ready to retire with 22 years, but he did the 2007 deployment to Iraq and then the 2010 deployment to Afghanistan.
Wow. That seems a long time.
Yeah, we're definitely proud of his service, but we're excited for his retirement as well. Any veteran or military family knows that, serving the country is such a great honor, and we're all part of the military family, and we really need the community's help in supporting our families, because deployment is hard enough, and then deployment during COVID when you cannot really attend support events, and then deployment over the holidays is especially difficult for the families. So this community has just really poured out their love for our troops, and it's just amazing. We're just so grateful to the Siouxland community for always stepping up, volunteering, donating items for care packages, making deployment dolls. We live in a great community.
That was Sarah Peterson of Support Siouxland Soldiers. The all-volunteer nonprofit organization helps soldiers and their families with a variety of needs, including groceries and care packages for soldiers serving overseas. To learn more or volunteer, go to supportsiouxlandsoldiers.org. Support for the exchange comes from Gregory Giles, investment advisor representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City, serving the financial planning and investment needs of clients since 2000. Information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at legacyfinancialllc.com. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Every year, we honor members of the military on Veterans Day, originally known as Armistice Day, a holiday created at the end of World War I to remember those who fought in the war to end all wars on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. We reached out to a few members of our local community to hear about their service and sacrifice as veterans and military family members.
My name is Dan Verbesky. My friends call me Pops. I'm 67 years old. I was in the U.S. Air Force from 1971 to 1979, and then I took about a 10-month break, and I went back in 1980, and I stayed until 1992. I've been a lot of places. I was in Omaha, I was in Rapid City, I was in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I did about a year and 2 months up in northern Canada, down in Texas, Then I got into recruiting, and I came back here to Sioux City, and I was recruiting back here in my hometown. Then my wife at that time, she was in the military too. I was here in Sioux City, and she was in Charleston, South Carolina, but she got orders to England. So I got out of recruiting to go to England with her. I got out of the Air Force while I was over in England. I have a lot of ideas about Veterans Day. My bottom line on veterans is that, and I've got a saying that I put out to everybody, and I say that veterans are people that at one time or other in their life, they weighed their life against yours and decided that yours was more important. And that's the way I look at veterans. I lost a lot of friends in Vietnam. I have a special thing in my heart. Just about everything I wear every day has got something to do with veterans, because I'm very proud of the time that I put in. I did everything from being a clerk typist to explosive ordnance to recruiting to intelligence. And I really liked my career. I missed the Air Force for a long time after I left it. But you get used to it. The worst thing you can do is give an old recruiter a soapbox, because he's not going to stop talking. But the way I see the thing is that people don't go into the military for patriotism or anything like that. They want something. They want education. They want training. They want a steady job, you know, something. They, you know, it's not all patriotism and all that. It isn't until you're in for a while. It's when you're out there in the field and working and all that, that it comes to you that exactly what you're doing, that you're doing something for your country, that you're doing something for your people back home and all over, you know, the nation and all that. When you come to that realization that, by God, you're doing something that's important, it's just an indescribable feeling.
My name's Sarah Peterson, and I'm a military spouse. My husband is getting ready to retire with 22 years. I'm also a mom and a stepmom. About 14 years ago, I founded Support Siouxland Soldiers because I wanted to connect with other military families. That connection is so important. And now I serve as the Soldier and Family Readiness Specialist for the Iowa Army National Guard. Both of my grandfathers served in World War II, so it's just incredibly important for me and my family to support other veterans and other military families. Veterans Day is very important to us. You know, it's important to remind the community and tell our veterans how much we appreciate their service and that they are not forgotten and that their service is not forgotten.
My name is Rachel Chappell. I am a 34-year-old mother of three. I have kids aging in range from 17, senior in high school, down to a one-year-old. My connection to the military is my husband, Brandon Chappell. He is in the Army National Guard. And he is currently in the middle of a 12-month-long deployment over to Iraq. So it makes me appreciate Veterans Day that much more. You know, growing up, you kind of always hear about the sacrifice that soldiers make and that their families make. But until you live it and you see it firsthand and you realize kind of all that they miss out on by protecting our country, it just kind of brings it all front and center. You know, you don't think about it unless you have someone in the military, maybe, that, oh, he's not going to get to see his daughter's first steps or his other daughter's high school graduation. He gives that up so that we can sleep peacefully at night. I'm glad that we have Veterans Day and that people really are thankful, and I just hope that they can remember to be that appreciative all year long.
And today, we thank Dan Verbesky for his service, Sarah Peterson for supporting Siouxland Soldiers, and you last heard from Rachel Chappell, who is also a military wife. Her husband is on a second year-long deployment to the Middle East in the past 3.5 years. We wish Sergeant Brandon Chappell a safe return after his tour of duty that ends in July. The patriotic music is courtesy of the Morningside Marching Mustangs. On Friday, with temperatures soaring into the 70s in early November, the Morningside College Marching Mustangs performed at two different outdoor venues and played music fitting for Veterans Day. Shane Macklin is the director of bands at Morningside College. and he shared the challenge of playing during the COVID-19 pandemic with Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer.
Started with a student's idea of outreach in the community. With so many changes this year due to COVID, we're grateful that we can even play. We've been following guidelines from a national study that was done with our instruments. And so we have bell covers, we do spacing, we even have puppy pads for the condensation that comes out of the instrument sometimes and things like that. So we went through several different guidelines just to stay safe. And we are performing at our football games, but we also wanted to do something out in the community. And one of the students mentioned going to Sunrise Retirement Center, which I thought was a great idea. Then I added the concert downtown because there's a big space right there, the plaza in front of the Sioux City Museum. And I thought it'd be a great place to play. Started checking weather, of course. The weather didn't look great on the actual Veterans Day, so then we moved it to Friday since it was 74 degrees outside, and it was a perfect day for us. And we had several people downtown, and of course, all the residents were out on their balconies at sunrise and out on the sidewalk, and we kept our distance, and we were able to play for them, and it was just a great day for both our audience and for us as performers to be able to go outside and perform for people, not just for ourselves. So that it was fun.
How did you decide what we were going to play that day to honor the veterans?
Well, it was close enough to Veterans Day that we decided on a patriotic concert. And there's many pieces of music that have been written for patriotic purposes. And, you know, since this is more of a marching band function, we did use some of our smaller folio music and, you know, made those decisions from there. And as we program a concert, we always look for contrasts, you know, the more upbeat kind of tunes along with, you know, music that's more moving. And of course, we play the national anthem. And also it's called Veterans Salute for us, but it's all of the military songs combined into one arrangement, and then we recognize veterans of each division of the military.
Did you have a favorite song that the band played?
I have lots of favorites. I think as far as a moving tune and one of our softer tunes was a tune called Battle Cry of Freedom. It's written, you know, quite a while ago during Abraham Lincoln's time. It was written actually in one day, and it was based on a request from Abraham Lincoln to get more motivation for the Union troops. They needed 300 more thousand troops that day. And so this song was written for everyone, and it was very moving, and like they said, it was the right time and the right piece of music to get that done for them. So I would say Battle Cry of Freedom. Played a selection. I liked the Veterans Salute and all the different military songs, and then a piece called the National Emblem March. That we played, and it has a little bit of sentimental reason for me because I was a saxophone player but learned how to play tuba when I was a senior in high school. And that tune, the National Emblem March, was the first tune I learned on the tuba, and it has a great low brass part towards the end. So I was reliving some memories there as well.
And your band has been impacted by COVID. When we heard this band play on Friday with the beautiful weather in front of all the residents at Sunrise, you said that some of the members weren't able to be there because they had to, I guess, stay away from everyone because they either tested positive or they were in quarantine.
We've had both in the band. We've had students that have tested positive. Sometimes that comes from family members at home. You know, their father will test positive. And then it, you know, passes through the family. And of course, we quarantine here. We have a system here on campus where we go through all the different levels. And so we have not had our full band here at one time, probably since the start of the school year. Not all of those have been, students that have tested positive, but we've had quarantines and all those kinds of things. So we were actually missing probably about 7 members from that performance. Probably one thing that really moved me as well, to see the residents' faces out at sunrise and see them tapping their hands and their feet and enjoying the music and enjoying the day, but also the stories. Some of them came up and talked to me afterwards, and you know, their personal stories about World War II and Vietnam and some of those other things. It's that personal connection from the band to those residents and to the music, and music moves people. And that's what some of those residents said, is that they were really moved by the concert, and that's goal achieved for us. That's what we're there for, is to bring a special moment into their lives. So we really appreciate the opportunity.
That was Shane Macklin, the director of bands at Morningside College in Sioux City. After today's show, you can listen to more of the concert at Sunrise Retirement Community on our website at kwit.org. And there's also a short video clip on the Siouxland Public Media Facebook page. You're listening to a special Veterans Day edition of The Exchange. Coming up next, we'll hear a couple of stories about veterans from the Vietnam era and from the World War II era that myself and Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer produced last year. On May 14th, 1969, members of the 185th in Sioux City returned from a mission in Vietnam. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer has more on the activation of the 373 airmen.
The 174th Tactical Fighter Squadron, a unit of the 185th Tactical Fighter Group, spent a year at Phu Cat Air Base in South Vietnam.
They were working hard, and these were all incredibly complicated, close air support. So they're right in there, in harm's way.
That's the new wing commander of the 185th Refueling Wing, Colonel Mark Mucky, who goes over a list of the group's achievements.
12 Silver Stars, 35 Distinguished Flying Cross, 30 Bronze Stars, 115 Commendation Medals, and 300-plus Air Medals.
3 members of the unit died, including one pilot killed in action, Warren Brown.
And I saw the smoke coming out of the belly of his aircraft, and knew he was hit and he was in trouble.
A memorial in front of the Sioux Gateway Airport was rededicated in July of 2008, 40 years after Brown's death. His colleague, retired Captain John Haley, spoke at the special service.
We'd gone from the cornfields of Iowa to a hot fighting war. But we didn't have time to fool around with surreal, really, realistically, because we immediately started checking out combat missions.
Haley says the airmen did receive better treatment in Siouxland than other parts of the United States.
And the people in Siouxland gave us a parade. And I don't know anybody, and I probably talked to 100 or more military people of that time, and nobody got a parade.
A military milestone of a conflicted conflict, remembered with honor by the current commander of the 185th.
We're very proud of the service that they did 50 years ago, and I think the thing we discussed today is that's who we were 50 years ago, and that's who we are today. The same great airmen executing the mission around the globe.
For Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
25 years before those Vietnam vets came back to Sioux City, the Allies were preparing for the D-Day invasion that effectively signaled the end of Nazi control of Europe and World War II. Many Iowans and Nebraskans served in the war. Some of them were journalists. One of them that may have been forgotten in recent years was Barney Oldfield. The University of Nebraska-Lincoln graduate coordinated a group of journalist paratroops who dropped into Normandy behind the lines 6 days before the D-Day invasion.
6 hours earlier, 13,000 U.S. airborne troops also parachuted in against German gunfire. With them went 6 war correspondents recruited by Nebraska and U.S. Army press officer Barney Oldfield. First, the journalists had to endure 15 days of physically and mentally grueling Army Airborne School. Then they had to survive 5 successful parachute jumps. All this for a chance to risk their reporting lives and for the first time ever jump into combat with U.S. soldiers.
That was UNL professor of journalism and documentarian Barney McCoy, who recently produced that segment on Oldfield on Nebraska Educational Television. He's working on a new documentary about Oldfield and other journalists who served in the war with him. He says that when he graduated from UNL, Barney Oldfield was really interested in going to Hollywood.
He had always been fixated on becoming an entertainment reporter and wanting to go to Hollywood, and actually was kind of like the Nebraska bureau reporter for one of the Hollywood newspapers for quite some time, and he would do movie reviews and that kind of thing. But he was really very gifted as a journalist, and when World War II came along, he enlisted. He became one of the first to be trained as an airborne Army soldier. And when World War II came along, was a public information officer who helped to work with the correspondents. I mean, I think he was attracted to not just celebrities, but to people who were very influential. He had a great deal of reverence towards Dwight D. Eisenhower and towards the generals that he reported to. In the airborne, and ultimately had been able to convince months before the Normandy invasion on June the 6th of 1944, what if we could somehow recruit some war correspondents that would be willing to go through airborne jump school, go through the training, complete successful jumps, so that they would actually be able to fly with the airborne hours before the kickoff of that invasion and parachute behind enemy lines and be there and report as the airborne soldiers attacked from behind.
You know, when I watched some of the report that was on NET about Barney Oldfield, and he said something to the effect of, if you didn't know what fear was, you would find out when you were standing there, you know, waiting to be, you know, shoved out of this plane over Normandy. You knew.
Absolutely. And to put that into some perspective for you, those planes were flying in at very low altitudes, and it was pitch dark. And they would look out that open door, and the only light they would see was the light of the moon on that night and the arc of the German tracer fire firing from the ground, trying to pick off as many of those paratroopers in the air before they hit the ground as they could. And that's what they were jumping into. So if you talk about a literal leap of faith, it was.
I couldn't help but think, just from a reporter's point of view, maybe today young reporters don't know how heavy a typewriter is. He had a typewriter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had a typewriter. In fact, it's sitting behind me here in my office. And it's the same typewriter that Barney had since the early 1930s, when he first began writing as a cub reporter for the Lincoln Journal here in town. And it went with him around the world. Everywhere he went, it was one of those, you know, extremely portable typewriters. But as a paratrooper, before they even began recruiting correspondents, he wanted to jump with that typewriter to see if it would withstand the force of, you know, jumping out of a plane and landing on the ground. And that was the prototype that they used to prove that, yes, in fact, a correspondent could jump with their typewriter and make it and be able to, you know, report and get dispatches out once they hit the ground in France and beyond, all the way into Berlin.
I hadn't realized that they were doing, when I first read this, they were going before. They had to go through enemy territory. Is that right? That sounds extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah. No, they were parachuting into enemy territory. And there was active battle, combat going on from the moment they hit the ground. The Germans knew that the Allies were coming. They didn't know exactly when. They didn't know exactly where. But they had prepared all kinds of defensive positions on the ground. Part of the airborne invasion also included gliders that the Germans had put up, these huge stakes along the ground in Normandy, so the gliders would hit these stakes and be destroyed. They had flooded fields to keep the gliders from being able to land, or if paratroopers landed, they might drown. So they had really done a good job of trying to dig themselves in. They knew that there was going to be this onslaught. There was no secret that this invasion was pending.
So they landed.
They did.
And they got through. And yes. They started sending reports. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. All six correspondents were able to make it back alive. One of the correspondents broke his leg, but that was the worst of the wear and tear that happened. He broke his leg when he parachuted and hit the ground awkwardly. But yeah, but they, from the get-go, Bob Rubin was the first of those correspondents to be able to hit the ground. There were roughly 13,000 airborne paratroopers that jumped in the early morning hours of June the 6th. And Bob Rubin was in the very first plane of the hundreds and hundreds of planes that ferried those paratroopers over into the battlefield. He was number six to jump of the 13,000 that jumped. General Maxwell Taylor was number two.
It seems incredible that at that time, the amount of danger that not just Americans, but English, French, all of the allies were willing to go through and risk their lives because of the threat to their to all of our way of lives here.
It was really interesting because Dwight D. Eisenhower knew that this was going to be an incredibly risky and costly operation. And he visited with many of the airborne soldiers before they actually took off from that airfield. And very frankly, had instructed the men that, you know, many of you will not come back from this operation, and thank them for being willing to really make that ultimate sacrifice. You know, we talk about that term ultimate sacrifice, but when you really watch it play out in the letters and the descriptions that you hear from people like Barney Oldfield, but more specifically from the correspondents that landed in Normandy and were reporting on what they saw, it's a very, very powerful, powerful part of sacrifice.
There's a great story that I saw in material about this particular mission that Bob Rubin, who you mentioned before, who was an Omaha newsman, he sent a message via carrier pigeon. Is that right?
You know, he had parachuted in. He decided, I can either land in an open field where the Germans will see me and perhaps shoot and kill me, or I can go for the orchard. I'm going to go for the orchard. So he lands in this orchard, and he's now hanging about 5 feet off the ground. His parachute is stuck in the tree, so he pulls out a big knife and he cuts himself down. And in darkness, all of the soldiers were given these little clickers. They called them crickets, and that's how they would identify themselves to each other. They would, you know, those little clickers, you click them on and they kind of make a cricket sound. And so that's how they would identify themselves to each other, that they were friendly and not enemies. So, you know, they're going through this darkness with these little clickers, and somehow he winds up jumping into a trench with General Maxwell Taylor. And, you know, and now they're trying to get to this village where they need to take out and secure a bridge. And they're going through all these things. And let me see, I've got it right here. So now Rubin is saying, as we dog trotted along one stretch, I noticed a soldier with a couple of cartons tied around his neck. They contained carrier pigeons. I talked him out of a pigeon, scribbled my first story, fastened it to the bird. We shooed him into the air. The story got through, the first story written from liberated France, and it was published throughout the world under the slug by carrier pigeon. Of course, that carrier pigeon had to fly 150 miles back across the English Channel through enemy fire itself, to be able to get to that pigeon coop where that message was given to Barney Oldfield, who could then share that with the world. So,
what did Barney do after the war?
After the war, for a while, he was back in Hollywood as a press agent for Warner Brothers. And then he was recruited to go actually and work for the Air Force as part of the, I think he was out in Colorado with a wing of the Strategic Air Command, and spent the rest of his career until he retired, I think in the early 1960s, as actually a member of the Air Force. Although during World War II, he was an airborne and he was an Army officer. So, but you know, then ultimately after that, he was in private industry for a while. But Barney really believed in the importance that journalists played in being the independent ears and eyes observers to be able to tell the world what was happening, particularly on the battlefield in remote locations around the world. And that was something that Eisenhower also strongly believed in, that, you know, that the having a reporter write in a newspaper article or make a broadcast and personally report on the efforts of the men and the women who were, you know, leading the Allied fight. It was huge for morale, not just on the battlefield where some of these soldiers would read their names or hear about their units, and knowing that the people back home were being informed about what they were doing, the sacrifices they were making, but also the, you know, the husbands, the wives, the fathers, the mothers, the brothers, the sisters, everyone back in this country who were desperate to know, you know, what their sons and daughters were doing as they fought in the war too.
Often we hear stories about people that were heroes, but we can't connect with them so easily. I mean, here's a guy from a little town in Nebraska who went to the University of Nebraska. He feels like someone, anyone that we might have known or our grandparents would have known.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, again, Barney, people described him and all, and they go, oh, you know, we could never tell. He was like the P.T. Barnum sometimes. You know, he was a great storyteller, and sometimes we had to try and figure out where the fact began and the myth ended. But he was really determined to make sure that journalists were represented. You know, he was a co-founder of the Radio and Television News Directors Association back in the early 1960s. But, you know, something else that I think that was really important to make notice of is that Barney never forgot his origins here in Nebraska. And he and his wife, Veda, raised millions of dollars that have helped to fund scholarships for students to this day here in this college and across the university for people that otherwise wouldn't be able to attend college. And I also thought it was really classy. A lot of those scholarships were named on behalf of some of the first American soldiers from Nebraska that died in the Normandy invasion.
That was University of Nebraska-Lincoln Professor of Journalism and documentarian Barney McCoy. As he says, he's working on a documentary about the journalists who worked behind the lines in World War II. And now on this Veterans Day, we hear about another World War II veteran, this one from Siouxland. A Sioux City man shared a special story he wrote in honor of his father's service. Here's This Is My Father's Flag by Bob Protexter. It was produced by Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer.
This Is My Father's Flag of Donald Homer Protexter. This is my father's flag in memoriam of his dedicated and diligent service to the United States of America. I have to write this because I knew he never would. This is my father's flag that is located in the row of flags in the front row of Graceland Park Cemetery that is located on Lakeport Avenue in the neighborhood of Morningside that is located in Sioux City, Iowa, that is located in the United States of America. This is my father's flag donated by our family in recognition of his service to our country in World War II. Some call it the Second World War. Some call it the Great Patriotic War. The First World War was the war to end all wars, but of course this was not the case. So there is a World War II. This is my father's flag for time spent and time wagered in the 1940s in parts far away in Egypt, in Italy, in France, and in many more parts unknown in towns and fields and places and mountains and valleys and more places and more places and more places that would even be difficult to locate on the best of maps. This is my father's flag for time allowed to write letters home to his mother.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. But
for time not allowed for sleep. For two packs of Lucky Strikes won in a game of cards where the winners smoked and the losers played again so that they could smoke. For drinking coffee out of a tin mug, for wearing the color of military green for years at a time, for wearing that same colored helmet for 24 hours at a time, and again for letters that were sent to home detailing the helmets, the green, the coffee, the cigarettes, and the sleep not allowed. This is my father's flag for driving wide ammunition trucks over thin bridges, obtaining scars that would never go away, and obtaining sights that would never be spoken about again. This is my father's flag for his service to his country as a serviceman in the 34th Infantry Division, also known as the Red Bull. This is my father's flag that is located at the intersection of Sunnybrook and Lakeport, directly by and closest to the signal light that is located some thousands of miles away from where many countrymen were laid to rest. And this is my father's flag located some mere feet from where he was laid to rest. With flag folded, with family emboldened, with widow molded, this is my father's flag.
After his military service, Donald Homer Protexter was best known as the head baseball coach at Morningside College in Sioux City, a post he held until 1955, until his untimely death in the summer of 1963 at the age of 60. His son Bob carries on his baseball legacy today. Be sure to join us next week when you can hear more about Chief Standing Bear. You've heard Small Wonders' Jim Scopp talk a lot about Chief Standing Bear in recent weeks here on Siouxland Public Media. Well, next Tuesday and Wednesday, two films will be shown at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. One of them is about Chief Standing Bear and his journey to Statuary Hall in Washington, D.C. The documentary recounts the true story of the Ponca Chief Standing Bear and his trailblazing human rights court case in 1879 that led to his designation as a Nebraska hero, with his statue being dedicated and installed in Statuary Hall in 2019. Also, we'll hear about a film that will be showcased next Wednesday night called Guanajuato Norte. It's about a migrant farm worker and how he copes with being away from his family as he tries to support their dreams and build a new life for them. We'll talk with Ingrid Holmquist, one of the producers and directors of these films, both of these films. That's next week on The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a great weekend.